Hello, and welcome back to Goat Homeschooling with Erin and Amanda. Today, we have a special guest, Regina Clausell. So she is an educational consultant and executive coach with a combined 26 years of experience in K through 12 and higher education. She has the pleasure of serving students, families, and staff in various positions, including credential specialist, education specialist, induction coach, instructional specialist, special education principal, and special education coordinator. The majority of her experience has been in K through 12 special education, and she has helped educators at all levels, including paraeducators, special education, and general education teachers, program specialists, nurses, and other related service providers. In addition, she's helped educational staff develop their skills in curriculum and instruction, special education, and leadership. Welcome to Goat Homeschooling with Erin and Amanda. I'm Erin.
And I'm Amanda.
This is the podcast to encourage moms that have been at this homeschooling gig longer than 5 years and plan on sticking with it through the high school years. The long haulers, as we like to say. We want to help you have the greatest of all time homeschool that meets the needs of your family by encouraging you with real conversations on the issues that pop up as you've been in this homeschool lifestyle for years.
So it'll be fun to try and see if there's people out there that need the encouragement and if there's anything that we can do to help others as they get started on their journey. That'd be awesome. That's what we're here for.
Regina, welcome on and thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. Good morning again, Erin and Amanda. And I just want to thank you again for having me on your show this morning. I am so excited just to have the opportunity to just encourage our homeschooling moms to advocate for their students and with special needs and also just kind of help them as I love how you guys say gear up for the long haul. I love that phrase. I, as Erin just shared, I'm Regina Clausell. I have been a special educator for, like I said, more than two decades, and I'm currently a special education coordinator with the local California school district. I'm also a mom of one and a grandma of two amazing grandchildren. Yes. And I will be honest with you, I feel like that my job is truly to make my job obsolete. Because by just empowering parents, families, and educators to truly advocate for students. That is truly my goal. My expertise is working with and helping equip parents, families, and also educators to truly be able to just advocate for students. That is so important. Okay, so one of the things that I truly wanted to just kind of share with our audience is just my why for why I ended up being a special educator, but also once I became a special educator, really realizing the importance of coaching and advocating for students with disabilities and their families. And it is kind of a personal story. I won't take a lot of time, but several decades ago, my sister went into foster care. And so we had this my little nephew. I'm going to call him Joey. And so when Joey came to us, he was really struggling academically. He had gone through a lot of abuse and just some other things. But and he had never attended school. So the first time he attended school, he was in the second grade. And so, of course, him being out of school, the first thing the school district wanted to do was assess him for special education. So they assessed Joy, and at the time they determined that back then the term was called mental retardation. So they found him eligible under that term. Now it's called intellectual disability. However, while the district was doing their assessing, I had the pleasure of playing with Joy and just really working with him on just some of the things that he needed to learn for school. I wasn't a teacher. I didn't have a background. I actually was in accounting at the time. But one of the things I just did naturally is that I realized that Joey had a very short attention span. He did not attend to much, but one thing he loves was sports. He loved the Lakers. He loved anything sports. And so I had the bright idea of using those things that he loved, right, to help him learn. And so he was learning his colors. And so I got the football and I said, Joey, the football is brown. What color is the football? And then I toss him the football and he'd say, the football is brown. And I'm like, Joey, toss me the brown football back. I did the same thing for the color orange. Joy, the basketball is orange. Real simple things, no training. And guess what? Within a few days, Joey knew brown. He knew orange. He knew that the softballs were white and tennis balls were yellow. And it was just those simple strategies that he was learning. And I did the same thing when he was learning to read. I got him sports magazines that talked about the Lakers and talked about these players. And so he wanted to know what it said. So guess what? He put the time into learning to decode. And so while these things were going on at home, the district was making their decisions about what he needed to qualify for. And so when I found out that they had labeled him as mental retardation, I did ask my sibling. I said, you know, I'd like to attend that IEP. So it was my first time advocating. And when I went into that IEP, it wasn't adversarial. I just said, you guys don't know Joy. Can I tell you about Joy? Can I tell you what he's able to do at home, what he shouldn't? And here are some samples of the things he can do. And can I tell you how he learns best? He's very hands-on, but he also has high interest in these areas. And so I was able to have that conversation. And actually, I was able to convince them to go back and reassess him. And they found out, oh, he has specific learning disability, which means that his, you know, his achievement and ability don't match. There's a gap. And so I shared. So that was the first time that I had ever advocated, but it showed me what the need was. And I decided at that time that I was going to go back to school to be a special educator. And once I did, that advocacy didn't leave me. Even as a teacher, I advocated. And when I would go into an IEP, I say, hey, everyone at this table, I know we have an advocate here, that's their official job, but everybody at this table's responsibility is to advocate for little Matthew. And so that is just in me. Even as a special ed administrator, when I go into IEPs, I have to go into high profile IEPs with advocates and attorneys. And I will tell you, I have a little conflict of interest, because when I walk into that IEP, I know that the district is saying you're going in to protect our interests. And I'm saying, and I've told my boss this, that is secondary for me. Primarily, I'm going in there to be the strongest advocate for the child in that IEP. And my goal is by the end of that IEP to have a parent look at me and say, or look at their advocate and say, I don't need you anymore, because I know my district is going to do what's best for my child. And so that is me. I could not advocate if I tried. I have to advocate for students. And I think the greatest thing I can do for parents is to empower them with the knowledge and information they need so that they can be their strongest advocate, so that they don't need an advocate or attorney to do that. And when I kind of relate this to homeschool, even as parents, you have to be able to advocate for the resources that your child needs, because there are public funds out there that can even support you if you are homeschooling a child that has special needs.
Wow. I'm nodding and smiling because you'd be a perfect homeschooler. You know, and I did so many things and have said so many things similar to what you said. All three of my kids are special needs in a way or another. Mm-hmm. And so I felt every bit of that. And I just thought, you know, there being an advocate for your own children as well as for someone else's children, have you ever said this person needs to homeschool, that this school is not right for this child, that they would be better suited in a homeschool environment?
I will be honest with you, I have. And you know, that's really difficult because I represent a district.
Yeah.
But I have had those conversations, and I will be honest with you. I don't know if my boss is going to hear this or not, but I will be honest with you. I have the professional conversation in an IEP meeting. And sometimes I've had to have some little side conversations with parents. Yes. And I've had to say things like, because I've had parents say, well, you know what, it's the system. And I will say, off the record, I understand that there are some systemic things in place. And I understand why you feel like this is not the best place for your child. Let me talk to you about some other, just so that you know, some other resources out there.
Absolutely. Right? I was hoping that you would say yes. I was hoping you'd say yes to that, because, you know, I mean, and I completely agree that you're the advocate for the child more so than you are for the district. And as such, sometimes it just isn't going to work. And that relationship, you know, I mean, no matter how many times we want a marriage to work, right? Sometimes the marriage is just inevitable that it's going to end in divorce. And I think it's the same it's true also for children in the school district. My oldest son had an IEP for 15 years and he's 23 and still has a speech impediment, you know? So sometimes yes. those IEPs yeah. just don't always do everything that they need to do, especially with the limited time and the limited resources that even the teachers have and the therapists have in the school system and things. And my second son, my two younger boys, I've homeschooled. And my second son, who's 18 now, has severe anxiety. And when we were getting ready to pull out of school, before I knew I was going to need to do that, his teacher, because we had a 504, he wasn't eligible for an IEP, he didn't have a big enough gap, right? Yes. So we did a 504. Yes. So we did a 504, and she said, well, you know, we could pull him out of the class and have him test in a private room, but when we go to get him from class, that causes anxiety. If we don't have him with a timer, everyone else starts asking, why doesn't he have to have a timer? We all have to have a timer. And so that causes anxiety. So no matter what we do, the things that are available to us to do in the school, everything we're doing is causing anxiety for him. And there's only so much that we can do. Now, of course, that was like 10 years ago. Since then, I've heard, there was a lot more they could have done. But there are so many parents like me that, you know, there's a time limit, you know, there's time is of the essence with that. And there are students that are really in an emergent type situation, you know, with their mm-hmm. mental health or whether it be whatever their needs might be, that it's just better to go home, you know, just go take them home and love them. And getting back into those resources, it's very difficult as homeschoolers because a lot of times we're on our own. It's difficult to find those resources. And so I'm interested in hearing what you have to say as far as public funds. Now, are those public funds going to be like, is it a federal funding that's available for anyone and everyone, or is it by state by state? Like, how does that work out?
So unfortunately, it does vary from state to state, and it does depend on how your state views homeschools. So for example, in California, homeschools are treated like private schools.
Okay.
So for any private school student, the parent has the right to have their child assessed by the district where they're homeschooling their child or where their child attends private school. And then if that student qualifies for certain services, so say, for example, you want to provide all of your instruction at home, but your child qualifies for like occupational therapy services or speech services, then those are things that there is funding for those services that be provided. Sometimes they may have you bring your child into the actual school setting just to receive those services. And so you do have to create a schedule. They do create an individualized family service plan or an IEP. So in the event of you ever decided to return your child to school, he would have that special education coverage. But also on that IEP, a lot of times when it's a private school or homeschooling environment, there's a special education teacher that's assigned to that student. And it's written like consulting services. So that special educator is consulting with the parent to give you strategies and things to work with your student. And there's a lot more information. I always recommend that depending on your state, you look at contact your Department of Education for your state, but also just start first with your school district.
I know in Missouri, it seems to vary district by district what they'll allow as far as services if your student isn't enrolled full-time mm-hmm. or even part-time. Some districts are fabulous at working with homeschool parents and others really just don't want that. And there's a continual push for them to enroll. Now, I work in Missouri with an organization called FHE, Families for Home Education. Yeah. And we have a lot of parents reaching out to us asking about specifically, my child has special needs and I want to pull them out to homeschool, but they have an IEP or 504 or whatever. So do you have any advice for parents with working with the school when they do want to unenroll their student from an IEP? Because I've heard that it's different. You know, in Missouri, you just send a letter to the district, to the superintendent, and say, I intend to homeschool my student, and then they're unenrolled from the district. But I've heard parents having issues with the fact that their child also has an IEP set up. that the district keeps contacting them. So is there a special form or, you know, maybe I'm sure it varies state by state, but do you have any advice on who to contact or how to help that parent navigate that IEP removal?
Yes. So once again, like you said, and I said before, it does vary from state to state. However, the first thing you want to do is contact your state's Department of Education, because they're the ones that ultimately govern that. So for instance, like I said, in California, since homeschools fall under private schools, there's certain things that you do have to have in place. You almost have to have, like, you know, your formal, like, when I say formal, meaning you've typed up, you know, this is the curriculum and all of these pieces to be able to be officially recognized as a homeschool. And then you will be able to withdraw your student. But definitely start with your Department of Education, because I will tell you there are going to be schools. And sometimes the schools themselves or the school districts aren't as knowledgeable as they should be on what your rights are as a parent. So know your rights as a parent. And then you will be able to, because you do need to, and I think this is across the country, you do have to officially withdraw your or exit your student from special education. Right? If you're saying you want to pull them out completely and also disenroll them from school. The state, in the district's defense, they do have an obligation to make sure that they're doing everything possible to follow up on students with IEPs, because it is a legal requirement that we provide those services.
When you're unenrolling a student with an IEP, the state hangs on to them a little bit more clingy than someone without an IEP, because they do get money, they get funds. So they don't want to lose that money. And yeah, that I don't want to sound like I'm talking smack there, but that's just the truth. Yeah. You know, so there are some more loopholes. So it's interesting that you said to contact the state's Department of Education, because oftentimes we stop with the district superintendent. And in the state of Missouri, we don't have to have approved curriculum. We don't have to have any oversight whatsoever. We have documentation requirements. But that documentation is not viewed unless we are prosecuted for educational neglect. And then we only have to show it to the judge.
Okay.
So if a caseworker pops up at our door and says, let me see what you're doing, we don't have to do that. We pick up and we call HSLDA and our lawyer talks to them, and that's the end of that. So, but yeah, in Missouri, we do whatever we want to do. We just have to log 1,000 hours. 600 of those hours, at least 600 of those hours have to be core, and then up to 400 non-core. And we just document, you know, so and I keep notebooks. And special ed kids, you know, generally speaking, for the general population, you can get rid of your books after 3 or 4 years. You don't have to keep those long term. However, if you have special ed kids, you have to keep those all the time. And I'm a hoarder anyway, so I just keep all of my books. And it's nice to go back and look at all of them and see their growth and progress. You know, my youngest son had to have occupational therapy for 4.5 years. He has dyspraxia. And some other special needs. We had to go through insurance, and we had to go, you know, I had to apply for grants to help offset some of those costs and things, because when you go through the school district, it's kind of a double-edged sword, because, you know, yes, sometimes those things are available to anyone and everyone within that school district, but then they want to know more. And there's a fear that the homeschoolers don't want to have to tell them more, you know, we don't want to have a relationship with them beyond what we're asking for. So I don't know, how would you suggest that parents navigate that if they don't want oversight, if they don't want the school district keeping tabs on their families, but they need to have whatever therapies that the school district, how do the parents navigate that without it getting uncomfortable? Do you have any suggestions for that?
Well, I can tell you, I'm going to be honest with you, that is tough. And I will go back to what you said about the additional funding, because as you know, the districts get funding for every child, general ed or special ed, but then there are those additional special ed funds. And so definitely I'm not going to, I definitely support you when I say that could be part of the motivation for that. But as far as recommendations for the parents, first of all, and because it varies from state to state, there's certain rights that are just federal, right? So when we look at IDEA, so that's the first thing, know and understand IDEA, but then also know what your particular state requires. And then just do inquiry. You can always contact your school or contact your state and you ask the question. So you can find out up front, just how much information do I need to give you? Just how involved do you need to be in this? Can I just show you proof that I'm homeschooling? And then if my child qualifies for speech services, you tell me where and when to show up. And you provide those services. Yeah. And then if you're going to recommend, you can recommend some homework or some strategies I can do at home with my child. Are you going to expect me to provide anything to you to prove that I've done these things? So I think that's where be as knowledgeable as you can. That way you can decide whether or not you want to take the district's option or whether or not you want to look at other resources, because there's so many agencies out there that will help. So for example, if you have a child with autism, I know there's the Autism Speaks and there are some other agencies that will help you. I've been doing a lot of research on just homeschooling too. And just like you talked about, Erin, the HSDLA, there's like so many resources now for homeschool parents that it wasn't the case, you know, 10, mm-hmm. 15 years ago, probably mm-hmm. even 5 or 10 years ago. So just know up front what your district and state is going to expect from you. And then you decide, as I say, you decide whether or not you want their goodies. If you're not willing to pay the price or make the sacrifices that they're asking, then you look for other options.
That's excellent. That's the best advice I've heard all day. Thank you.
Yeah. Now, Regina, I loved the story that you opened with, and you touched on a piece of my heart because I was a foster parent and two of my children are adopted through foster care. So in Missouri, all foster children are considered special needs. And so, you know, because of the PTSD mm-hmm. and the trauma and everything. And so I have one that's a senior coming up this year and another that's going to be a kindergartner. So I'm just starting out. How would you help parents that are wanting to homeschool special needs children find the confidence that you had with your nephew? What are some tips or ideas or things that you could share that would help? Because I know a lot of parents get overwhelmed with the idea whether something in the school is not working for their child with special needs, or they have a gifted student, something isn't clicking, and they want to have the option to homeschool, and then they find themselves with this child at home that they just feel overwhelmed. So could you talk a little bit about that?
Okay, so I think first of all, as I have shared before, it's so important to be aware and be knowledgeable. So know your rights. So for example, there are the parent rights and procedural safeguards. Right. So in those, it tells you what your rights are if you have a child with special needs when it comes to the district. Okay. In regards to you actually homeschooling, I think the first thing you need to know is if you know that your child has been identified with the disability, find out as much as you can about that disability. Find out the characteristics of that disability. Find there is a lot of information out there about strategies that you can use in the home to work with your students. In fact, I don't know if we'll have time today, but it's definitely resources I can share with you guys. I was going to just touch on two other disabilities, which are autism strategies, and then also students with ADHD, because a lot of times when parents are homeschooling, it's maybe because their kids have those types of diagnoses, and a lot of times they just feel like the district is just not prepared to deal with their behaviors, and you see a lot of suspensions or a lot of punitive things going on, and the parents get, hey, my child has a disability, and you're not responding to it correctly. It doesn't mean that I have all of the tools I need to respond, but I think I can do better than what you're doing. So I do think making sure that you understand your child's disability. One of the things that I was going to share, just when you think about a child with autism, there are certain things. So for example, just a real simple tip, if you have a child with autism, and if you say, hey, go in there and clean up your room, the child may not do it. And it's not that the child is being rude. The child doesn't realize you're talking to them. But if you say, Johnny, and get Johnny's attention, Johnny, I need you to go in and put your clothes in the basket, being very specific about what you can do. You're going to see that Johnny is more likely to respond than if you just randomly say, go in there and pick up your room. They don't, number one, are you talking to me? Number two, what does pick up my room mean? Do you want me to physically pick up my room? Because kids mm-hmm. with autism, typically what? Very literal. So mm-hmm. figurative language, metaphors, jokes, sarcasm, all of that that goes over their head. So make sure that you understand that disability and then understand just those little key things that's going to help you be able to communicate with your child better. Understanding, in a sense, I call it your child's worldview. Like, you may not understand why your child keeps perseverating over a certain thing, whether it's Minecraft or wearing a certain shirt. But if you understand why, it's not that your child is trying to be annoying or difficult. There's a reason why certain textures, you know, don't go well with students with autism. So I think if we understand that, understanding our child, just like if we have a child without a disability, we're going to kind of understand what makes them tick. We have to be willing to do that more so with a kid with disability. And I think one of the things that I would just share with parents too is be patient with yourself, because there are going to be times when you're frustrated. It's like, oh my gosh, I do not want to hear about Minecraft one more time, you know, or, and you may blow it. You have to be able to forgive yourself, learn from it, and then, you know, move on. But be patient with yourself as much as you need to be patient with your child.
There's a lot of parallels between special needs as well. Like, you're talking about the autism diagnosis, and every single one of those things that you said about autism, gifted kids do the same thing. And yes, oftentimes they have the same, and it's very difficult sometimes to differentiate between gifted kids and kids that are autistic. And I've had a couple of therapists go down the list. Okay, which one? When yes, my kids were getting diagnosed with things, and it turns out they're gifted with sensory issues and anxiety and all those yes, things. So, and nodding. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. No. I'm glad you brought that up, Amanda, because that's one of the things that I realized too, is that we had a lot of kids that ended up qualifying for special education. And what it was really is that they were like gate kids or gifted mm-hmm, kids. But because the teachers didn't know how to engage and challenge them, guess what? Off-task behavior, right? Because the student is like, I'm bored, I already know this. So guess what? I'm going to take over the class, or I'm going to disrupt. Yep. And what it really boiled down to is that because they weren't engaged, you started seeing behaviors. And all of a sudden now, instead of them being tested for GAIT and putting them in gifted or advanced classes, right, they end up in a ED, a emotional disturbance class, or a mm-hmm, class for behaviors, because the educators didn't get it right.
Yep. Yep. That's exactly it. And then when you add twice exceptionalities to that, where they have giftedness and some kind of learning disability, it makes them almost invisible in some instances. And those, there are educators. We don't want to, you know, talk poorly about educators, because as a whole, they are wonderful. There are beautiful, yes, are, diamonds in the rough educators,
yes,
but there are a lot that miss it. And yeah, and we have not been yeah, lucky in that. And I think that was God leading us to homeschooling. And so that's part of that yes, too. When we listen to ourselves and we follow, when we learn and we're doing what you're saying and doing research about the specific disabilities, and we're going through that, the motions of figuring all of that out, we can also listen to God and listen to yes, what our hearts say. And if it's mm-hmm, meant for us, for our kids to stay in school, in the public school system or private school or what have you, and that's what we're hearing, then we have to figure out how to advocate for that. But if it's what we're hearing is that they need to go home and we have some dramatic changes to make, then we need to do that too.
No, I mean, I heard you. I'm so glad that you mentioned God, because any choice we make, right? Right. We need some help. And I will yeah, say that I like the fact that you are, you know, recommending just to your audience that make sure, you know, and maybe not everybody believes in God, but make sure that you truly are weighing the pros and cons for both. And if you do pray, yes, pray. And to find out, because you want to make sure you're doing what's best for your child. You may feel like homeschooling is best, but can you provide the very best for your child in homeschool? Right. So you have to look at that. School isn't working, right? The current program isn't working. So you really just doing some research and some prayer and truly figuring out what is best for your child in this instance. I have seen parents where they may have four kids. Homeschool was right for two kids. homeschool wasn't right for the two kids, because right. they were very social and they needed some other things that school environment could offer them. And they weren't struggling in certain areas and was able to be successful mm-hmm. in school. So they made those choices. So just make sure that when you're making your choice, you're looking at what's best for that individual child and not. And I always say this, even in IEP meetings, I remind parents that, remember, this is about what's best for Johnny. Mom, I'm sorry, it's not even about what's best for you. Today, it truly is about what's mm-hmm. best for Johnny. So we're all going to need to make some compromises mm-hmm. to make sure we do what's best for Johnny. And that's true when you're making the decision for homeschooling as well.
It is hard to yeah. see past ourselves to figure yeah. all of that out. Yeah. I had a career, you know, I was not wanting to homeschool and I was dragged into it kicking and screaming, but you know, it's those changes that needed to be made. Go ahead, Erin. I'm sorry.
Oh no, I was just going to add that that's probably the very first lesson you learn as a homeschool mom is you have this expectation of how it's going to look. And because you have a child that's there every day, it's not going to look like that. It's going to look like what they need. And mm-hmm. when we bend our will to that, to sacrifice our day to modeling, what are we going to model to our children? Is it that we are going to throw a fit if we don't get our way with what we expect the day to be like? You know, it's a lot of give and take with the relationship. And Regina, I was also just before we got on, taking a look at your website and the coaching that you do. And I love that your faith is woven into, I mean, I can't even say woven into, because I feel like faith it's who you are, you know? So do you want to talk a little bit about the coaching that you do or how our moms can reach out if they need an extra bit of guidance or a listening ear, someone has all the expertise that you have within districts to help navigate that?
Okay, sure. I actually offer a few different services, but when it comes to parents, I really offer coaching. I offer coaching. I also offer advocacy. So as a coach, if you're someone as a parent, you're saying, you know, kind of know my rights, but I just need someone to kind of coach me through this. I'm having this particular issue with my school or with homeschooling. I'm trying to get in certain services for my child while I'm doing homeschooling, but the district is resistant, or, you know, certain agencies I know out here, like we have Inland Regional Center, we have other programs, Department of Mental Behavior and Mental Health. So we have other resources. So sometimes you just may need someone to just coach you through that conversation or coach you through that meeting. And so I'm available to help kind of walk you through it, help you kind of get your talking points, make sure that you have the resources. If you're looking at, if you need to refer to education code or IDEA, help make sure that you're well informed. So when you go into that meeting or have that conversation, you are prepared. And then I'm also available for follow-up, or if you just want to text me and say, hey, this isn't going so well, you know, what about this? I'm available in that way. But then also as an advocate, there are times when I will actually go in and I work a lot with parents that actually have their children in school. So I will go to IEPs. I just can't have a conflict of interest. So I can't do it in my, what we call our self-bustle, any of the schools under me, but I can go into other districts and I actually go in and advocate. I've had at least one homeschool parent where I've kind of worked with them as an advocate because they were advocating to get speech and language services for their child, and what the district was telling them was not true. Right. Mm. And so I was able to come in and bring Ed Code and bring IDA and show them how they're denying this child FAPE, because the child did indeed have an IEP, and because the child is in a recognized homeschool program, which means they're recognized as a private school, there's certain things that you are required to do. And so I was able to do that. So, I mean, then also I have the other side where I'm trying to work on districts to do a better job of partnering with their parents, so that their parents can feel heard and be involved in their IEP. So some people say, okay, aren't you working both sides? Well, I feel like if I get the schools where they need to be, guess what? Parents will need people like me, right? And the school, because my goal is to get schools, if it's that you want to send your child to school, you get the school and the parents together. If you choose to homeschool your child, then I need for school districts to understand that these are still your parents. These are still your students. So what can you do to support them? Because it all means all. If we're saying that we want to educate all students, That means even the students where their parents decided that your particular school program is not appropriate for them, they reside in your district boundaries, so they're still your children. They're
that's a mountainous task, and I applaud you for it. I think that's wonderful. Yeah. We've got about 1 minute left, so if you want to drop some, maybe your email or way to contact you, and you know, maybe you can send us some of those resources that you talked about earlier, and we can be sure to post them whenever the episode airs. Go ahead.
Okay, definitely. I will send out some resources on different agencies that can be of a support. I also will send the strategies that I was going to share of just different ways that parents can support their children at home when their children have different disabilities. And then if you want to reach me, you can reach me at Living Life Purposefully, the number 55, at gmail.com. And then I also have a website, which is llwpcoaching.com.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening today. We hope you'll subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you'd like to suggest topics for us to discuss, or if you have any questions, find us at Goat Homeschooling on Facebook, on Instagram at Goat Homeschool, and email us at goathomeschoolingpodcast@gmail.com. Have a great day. Thanks for listening.